sit back, grab a cup of coffee, and explore some of today's most pressing educational issues through the experienced eyes of leading education personalities. Welcome to Coffee. Well, I'm really looking forward to this conversation and learning more about the National Writing Project that's, you know, come up in so many different interviews and conversations around education, about the ways in which we're helping to support both teachers and students and projects that are inclusive of writing and the quality of that and growth from a student perspective. Elise, I want people to know about the National Writing Project for those that, for whatever reason, everyone has busy lives. They may not know of the National Writing Project. So just give us a little bit of the elevator pitch, if you don't mind, and then we can go from there and learn a little bit more about some current things that are going on.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. Well, the National Writing Project is now a fairly senior organization. We've been around since 1974, but it is in some ways a very modern organization. It's a networked organization, and we have roughly 185 local writing project sites. Each one of them is homed at a university across the 50 states, and each one practices a model of teacher-to-teacher driven learning, a peer learning model where what we try to do is surface really strong exemplars of exceptional teaching across a variety of areas, and then help us as scholars and as teachers interrogate them, learn from them, spread the kind of powerful practices we see in those examples of learning, do research together, and then make ourselves available to schools and districts for professional learning contexts. And that's happening across the country at those local writing project sites, and then increasingly in open, online, and connected learning opportunities on the web.
So, boy, you've got my head spinning in lots of different ways, because this is really fantastic, both as a parent and someone who's in education, is that I love the network component of it when you're talking about, 185 sites each tied to a university and then providing that local support. Let's talk about let's go bottom up. Let's talk about K-12 and the type of support that they are looking for with regards to these local writing sites. I mean, what are you seeing? What are they asking for? And how has it changed, their feedback changed, the way in which you look at disseminating the learning?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the first things which many people don't think of necessarily as the first step, but one first step that many districts and schools and educators are asking for is a vehicle for their very strong educators to develop their capacity as local leaders and as people who can help in a sort of peer-to-peer learning way to facilitate professional learning in schools and in districts. I think, we're used to saying that in almost any organization, our biggest brain trust and our highest capacity brain trust are the employees that we already have. And we talk a lot about teacher leadership and what an incredible enabling capacity that is. But actually, we don't necessarily have a lot of things in place for teachers to develop their skills and capacities in adult learning and peer-to-peer learning and analyzing their practice and making it public in ways that really produce learning for themselves and others. So one of the most important things I think we do, and that increasingly districts are asking for, is facilitating ways so that we and our colleagues together can be our own best agents of productive change. And once that happens, then how do we network those people bigger than just the school or the department or even the district, so that kind of the best approaches and ideas that are generated in one place can be moved in powerful ways to different contexts and different places and become an engine of improvement and change in some new context. So that kind of learning from practice and learning how to learn from practice is kind of at the center of a lot of the work that writing projects do and that increasingly schools request them to do for them.
What is the state of writing as a skill set in education from your perspective? I mean, I think that the layperson says it's probably eroding to some degree because of technology and shorthand that's gotten even shorter than shorthand. And mm-hmm. that's impacting the ways in which we interface with information and literacy and digital literacy as well. So where are we with regards to writing as a skill set in this country?
Yeah. Well, you bring up two important threads to keep in mind. One is writing and writing itself and how it's changing and the demands of writing are changing. And then the other, what is the skill set and what's the nature of it, in, especially, let's say, in K-12 education. Let me start with that first, because we have been able to kind of watch the state of writing in school, let's say, from our vantage point around the country for many decades. And I would say that in general, people are probably not aware that today there's a really a deep need to rebuild attention to writing itself. For many years in many K-12 schools, the effort to move toward especially a focus on certain reading and math skills, let's say, that are testable, to be able to move minutes in the curriculum to things that might have been connected with particular standards and accountability packages. A lot of that movement in education was purchased at the cost of minutes devoted to things like writing, the kinds of skills and tasks that demand really thoughtful and engaged attention from young people over time. And we've been in that kind of mode in American schools for long enough that there are now, we can see kind of a whole generation of teachers who may themselves not have seen or experienced a school that had the kind of thoughtful and engaged attention to writing that we saw pretty routinely in the late 80s and 90s, let's say. So I think an interesting point is that right now, when standards and attention to writing are in many cases changing and growing and developing, we have a situation where lots of schools have not really experienced or seen how it is that they can create the time, the space, and the instructional emphasis that will help young people really become strong writers. So in some ways, we see that in schools. At the same time, what you mentioned about writing, and especially the fact of our digital age, means that in a way, writing could be more complex now than ever before, but also more available and more important than ever before. One side of the digital revolution that people should remember is that at the same time that we do worry about things like 140 character thoughts or text speak or things like this that people often talk about and worry about in terms of writing skills, at the same time, we've never had a more rich ecological context for young people and all people to be producers of content. We've never had the opportunity to do something like add our thoughts and edit and make more profound a Wikipedia page, let's say. That kind of work that's available right now to almost anybody on the web, given the preparation and support that they would want to do it well, that was a writing opportunity simply unavailable to generations before at a mass level. So it's a great moment to be a writer and a writing producer. The tools are fabulous, and we can go further with our ambitions in writing than ever before. What we need really is an instructional context that honors the fact that everybody really can be a deep producer of content today, in a way that wasn't true a couple of decades ago.
You know, Elise, like I said, I mean, when you think about the ecological context and that phrasing that you put, I mean, it does open up an entire window of opportunity to discuss the ways in which we can produce content and the impact on young people to be able to share their voice. And with that, I would love to get your perspective on gender. And you might say, well, what do you mean gender? I've had conversations with authors recently who have talked about, in the space of education and literacy, you know, that when we look at it, we haven't done a very good job of looking at the ways in which boys and girls, as young people, as young students, engage with writing, engage with just literacy in general, and confidence to be able to explore the things that might interest them on different levels for very different reasons. And I would be curious as to how you see that, and how can we do a better job to value contributions from, you know, students of all kinds and backgrounds in a way that supports them wanting to write and produce more content.
Yeah, it's such an interesting and important problem, and really goes to the question of creating learning environments that really have equity at the core, that will provide a learning situation that all kinds of young people can find a way to advance in. There are lots of ways, and we would say this is deeply true of literacy, there are lots of ways that literacy itself, and particular types of literacy, have been, yes, gender-inflected or race-inflected or class-inflected. And so, in fact, we can often see that there are pockets of resistance, let's say, to certain types of products or certain types of demands or tasks from different kinds of young people, a sort of sense that that's not what we do, or that is what we do. And part of what's interesting now, I think, is that some of those inflected literacy tools, like let's say a kind of literary essay on the one hand versus a type of poetry on another hand versus a kind of classic, let's say, information article that you might publish on a website about, I don't know, engine repair or something like that. I was actually just looking at something like that on the web the other day. All of these products actually really demand a kind of social literacy engagement from the writer. They're all very different, and we can develop tremendous skills across all of those different products without having to say that actually every young person in the world needs to learn one of those at a particular time in his or her life. So sometimes that issue, I think, that you've named is really one that is curricular as much as it is about anything else. How can we create context where actually a lot of different young people have a way in to understanding themselves as producers and creators and the responsibility that comes with that? And given that mindset, that little shift in mindset there, what then can we kind of unleash for them to really go through skill development? We see it all the time with young people who maybe in schools look as if they are not well achieving, but we see that same young person in another context, an after school setting, a place driven by interest, a club that they're in, and it looks like a different person because they've been engaged through their interests and their capacities. And that's the kid we have to unleash and kind of in every setting that we can.
Yeah, I agree with you. How are we doing with regards to technology? Have we done a good job of integrating in solutions that can help writing literacy efforts? Because we know that young people, I mean, whether the establishment likes it or not, young people use technology 24/7, and that's how they engage in their worlds. And so I'm always curious as to how we are interfacing technology with that way to meet it, not just to digitize something, because that doesn't, you know, that's sort of, right, that's easy to do from the adult perspective. And then the young person says, well, we know what you were doing. Are you seeing that we're doing a good job in this area?
Well, I think that many places we are trying to figure it out. We're working really hard to figure it out. Educators around the country, given whatever they have as their local infrastructure, questions of what, you know, what devices they have, what bandwidth they have, what setting they have. A lot of people really working hard to figure it out. I think that we're finally moving beyond some perhaps limiting myths that we might have had about technology. I think one limiting myth was that young people, for example, they use tech all the time. They do. So they'll actually figure it out on their own. And what we're really seeing is that young people use technology in certain ways and do figure that out. They figure out the devices. They can often figure out and move quickly between and among social media. But we see some really important technology-related skills or information-related skills and composing-related skills that they're not actually developing very well. And when they shift their context, their interests, what they want to use technology for, there's a real learning curve that they need to go through in order to be smart and capable and strong users of technology for their own life goals. So I think we've moved beyond this one limiting myth, which is they'll kind of figure it out because they're a digital native generation, to the awareness that they really need a learning context and a set of tasks and opportunities to develop kind of high-end skills with digital composing. And I don't necessarily mean, and it can mean this, but I don't necessarily mean something like the use of high-end tools for media creation. Some young people will pursue that. I really mean the kinds of things that we would hope, let's say, all thinkers, writers, and citizens would be able to understand, especially in a context of just massive and often very flawed information environments that we encounter on the web, or confusing and puzzling settings for, or maybe dramatically negative settings for online discourse and participation, how to manage collaboration in those sorts of settings, how to navigate misleading and incomplete information, how to tell marketing from scholarship, and a whole range of things that are not directly about devices, not that sense of technology, but about the environment that this internet technology makes available to us and how to navigate it.
To be an informed consumer of the information that we are presented with on a daily basis. Elise, what's really interesting to me is your background, obviously former high school English journalism teacher, and I would be curious to know what it's like for you when you close it down at night and you think about now your role as the executive director of the National Writing Project and to sort of be, you know, at the head and from the leadership perspective of such a significant organization, to your point that probably a lot of people, they need to know, and maybe they did not know the depth of it, but, you know, 185 sites around, you know, the country and the impact it can have. But did you ever envision this for yourself? And what is it like to think about the impact that you can have individually and collectively as an organization?
I think probably most people don't envision early in their life where they're going to get to down the road. I certainly didn't. And joined my own local writing project as a high school teacher, and experienced it for all the reasons that still 3,000 teachers a year come to a writing project in the summer for the same motivation. Wow. I was there to be with my colleagues. I was there to learn. I wanted to improve my practice. It was in many ways life-changing because it is such a rare opportunity for teachers to be in a place that focuses so deeply on practice, so deeply on learning from each other and developing the skills to do that, and kind of unleashing some questions about yourself as an educator that you can pursue your whole life. It very much dramatizes, I think, to educators, that you can chart a course as a leader and a thinker and an intellectual of your own practice. And that's what happened to me. So it did unleash a pathway that included all kinds of things, working in professional development, pursuing graduate education, doing research, leading a local writing project, and now where I am at the National Writing Project. But that's really, I think, one of dozens and dozens and hundreds of stories like that, and the pathway maybe to a different kind of role, but also to another significant role. People move into administration, people develop nonprofits, they create curriculum packages, they engage in research, because there's something about educators often that they bring eclectic talents and a deep commitment often to their own learning. That's often what drove them to education to begin with. And when the message is you should unleash that for the public good and on behalf of young people, all kinds of amazing things happen. And I have to say it's a deep privilege here in this organization. I'm sitting right now, for example, at a retreat center where a huge number of teachers and colleagues in science and technology centers are working up resources and curriculum from several years of project work that they did, trying to understand better the intersection of literacy and writing and deep learning and science. And they feel very much that they have a responsibility to share their learning with their colleagues. Somewhere else that's happening around technology in the writing project, somewhere else that's happening around early literacy. Wherever people find a passion for the thing that they want to work on as a leader, if we can facilitate that, they can do amazing things. So I've had an incredible journey, but it's also wonderful to see the journeys that so many educators are taking that make a real difference on the ground every day with the kids that they work with the colleagues that they work with. It's a privilege.
You are a fantastic ambassador for the National Writing Project and for education in general, and I sincerely mean that with all the folks that I talk with. You have a real way with understanding the complexities and communicating it in a very, very effective manner. So we want to wish you continued success. Once again, I'm Dr. Rod Berger. Join us for our next cup of coffee as we continue to have conversations in education that matter to you. I'm Dr. Rod Berger, and this is Coffee.